what is a word, Sophia, that you surprisingly have a complicated relationship with? I want to hear the word, and I want to hear all the nitty-gritty backstory behind the word.
One, it makes me feel kind of flattened as a person. And two, it makes me anxious.
I just worry that people wouldn't take me seriously because of that.
Hopefully it'll get our listeners to start thinking about their relationship with words, words that they hear a lot, or words that others use a lot to describe them.
Welcome back to Bamboo and Glass, a space where two Asian American women share the underrepresented perspectives that shape our lifelong journey of learning and unlearning. I'm Taeun.
And I'm Sophia. We have been in a long-distance friendship for almost 9 years now, and our desire to keep in touch and invite others into our conversations is what led us to creating Bamboo and Glass. On our podcast, you will hear Asian Americans reckoning with their place in the world and discovering the abundant possibilities of who they can choose to be in their careers, families, relationships, etc.
So we're still at the beginnings of our 2022 season 4, and I figured that there might be some new listeners who are joining in, and so welcome to all those new listeners. If you happen to be looking at our episodes and are unsure where to start, because I know we have quite a lot of content, I want to recommend that you check out episode 160, 2021 Bamboo and Glass Wrapped, and that's where we actually offer up a couple of episode recommendations from conversations we had in 2021.
Yeah, and you can always DM us on Instagram at Bamboo and Glass if you'd like more recommendations, and we will drop that link in our episode description. And as a quick reminder, new episodes are released every Sunday wherever you listen to podcasts, and don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Bamboo and Glass to see memorable quotes from our guests and to see updates about new episodes. Even better, consider rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, or treating us to a coffee through our Buy Me a Coffee page, all of which is linked in our episode description. All right, Taeun, what are we going to talk about today?
So in just so many of our conversations, and off on the mic, off the mic, as well as our personal endeavors, I think it's pretty apparent that we spend a lot of time crafting the word choice in a lot of our messages. So I believe that's why like politics can be so influential. We had a whole discussion at the beginning of the pandemic on this podcast as to why the wording Chinese virus is so harmful. And so many of us are intentional and careful with like what we put onto the internet for various reasons. It can come from a place of empowerment, of wanting to choose the right words to empower people, or just out of fear of scrutiny, of not wanting to get canceled. But Sophia, I know that in episode 118, we talked about being an Asian American podcast and the duties and possibilities that come with that. And in our recap episode, you mentioned that this was an episode that felt the most vulnerable. And I feel like it has a lot to do with how we talk about the weight of words that would just, you know, right off the bat seem really empowering and only positive, but it actually elicits a lot of complicated feelings for us. So it kind of got me thinking about what words, labels, and titles have been associated with us individually, because aside from the fact that we are both an Asian American podcaster, we have other things that are associated with us as individuals. And I personally would love to learn what words you often hear associated with you, especially the ones that make you feel a certain way. And I'd also love to share that with you too, so that we can get to know each other better.
Yeah, this is such a good idea. When you first told me this idea, I was very excited, because you're right, we've talked a lot about the power of words and labels, but only words and labels that describe like collective identities and not ourselves specifically. So this is going to be so fun. And I think it's really powerful to have an episode dedicated just to singular words. And hopefully it'll get our listeners to start thinking about their relationship with words, words that they hear a lot, or words that others use a lot to describe them. To kick off the conversation, we can start with maybe some relatable rants about words. What is a word or phrase that you've heard used a lot in the news, in conversations, etc., that just really frustrates you and drives you up the wall?
Yeah, so I feel like normally I would have a lot to say about like the workplace. If you want, you know, some of the word choices that drive us up the wall when it comes to working in tech, you probably should check out our Navigating the Workplace episodes. We'll link those in the description. But I was reflecting on the phenomena of Asian cuisine and Asian media becoming really popular. And sometimes the words that I hear associated with people starting up new ventures is the words modern, higher quality, and clean. And clean, I think, is like the worst. And so this is, I think you could immediately imagine that there are quite a lot of non-Asian folks that would fit into this category of folks who are trying to start up an Asian cuisine restaurant, let's say, and they use it words in their marketing like, oh, we are doing a modern twist on the traditional Asian cuisine, or we are using high quality ingredients. And that kind of, to me, implies that other places like weren't using high quality ingredients. And then the worst one is clean, because there's, you know, so much history around Asians being stereotyped as dirty and as having illnesses amongst themselves. And so that's what I think of, but I also consider this in the context of people, younger generations who are, you know, starting up their own businesses. So I've noticed that a lot of boba shops that are started by young people also use those same words and terminology of like, oh, we use high quality teas and we don't use syrups. We don't use those cheap things. Like, we wanted to do a modern twist. And I think that's just kind of unfortunate, because you're kind of comparing yourself then to a lot of mom and pop shops that were started when, you know, those people weren't as assimilated into America. Those people are just trying to find a way to support their family. So I think that usually drives me up the wall. And I'm like, okay, let me actually see how good your food is before you go tell me that this is a modern, high quality, clean take on the normal cuisine that you've eaten at home.
Oh, yeah. Along those lines, I've also heard people call traditional mom and pop restaurants like, oh, the ambiance is so loud or unpeaceful. And I think when I talk to my other East Asian friends, we joke in the most well-intentioned way. It's like, oh, if you see a restaurant that's like really busy and they don't have time to like to wait on you hand and foot, like that means it's authentic. Like,
it's the restaurant really good, is so food good too. Yeah, right. My mom always says, when you go look for a place to eat before Yelp was a thing, she was always like, look at how many people are in the restaurant, look at like how busy. Yeah, right. And because that's the place you want to go to. You don't want to go to the place that only has like a couple of customers at peak hours. So that's usually how my mom approached it. And so I always feel a sense of connection. A Korean word for it is chong, to go to those, you know, quote unquote, like run down hole in the wall restaurants, because the food feels even more comfortable and even more homey for me to feel like, oh, if I, even though I'm not close to my parents right now, this feels like food that my parents would be giving to me. And these are like mom figures and father figures. So yeah, so those are just a couple of words that drive me up the wall when it comes to Asian cuisine. But I'm curious what you think of when you think of words that lately have just you sighing out of frustration and just being like, where do I even start with this word? What is that word for you?
Okay. I know you didn't pick one about the workplace, so I will pick one about the workplace. And this might be a little bit of a hot take, but my word is imposter syndrome. And I don't think it's bad that people label their own feelings as imposter syndrome. I think that's the word we've been taught to use to categorize a lot of feelings of shame, of embarrassment, of wondering if you're good enough for your job. But the phrase bothers me is I think it's actually a little misleading and unhelpful. And to explain my thinking, I'll pull from a really great Harvard Business Review article. So I'll read a quote from it. Although feelings of uncertainty are an expected and normal part of professional life, women who experience them are deemed to suffer from imposter syndrome. Even if women demonstrate strength, ambition, and resilience, our daily battles with microaggressions, especially expectations and assumptions formed by stereotypes and racism, these microaggressions often push us down. Imposter syndrome as a concept fails to capture this dynamic and puts the onus on women to deal with the effects. workplaces remain misdirected towards seeking individual solutions for issues disproportionately caused by systems of discrimination and abuses of power. Mm-hmm. So I think it's helpful to talk about our collective feelings of anxiety and insecurity, but maybe the label of imposter syndrome ends up being less helpful than we hope, because that term makes it feel like this is an individual illness that we have to deal with on our own, rather than, hey, there's probably something broader going on that is causing so many people to feel the same way about themselves.
Yeah, no, that's such a good quote that you pulled out around imposter syndrome, because if you were to compare imposter syndrome with capitalism, like if you feel like you experienced imposter syndrome, I feel like you could spend a lot of time feeling doubtful about whether other people around you feel imposter syndrome. But you wouldn't say the same thing about capitalism. It's like, okay, yes, we all experience capitalism and it all affects us in like particular ways. Mm-hmm. And so imposter syndrome feels like a personal diagnosis, but why is that a personal diagnosis when, like you said, it's caused by systems? Like, shouldn't the diagnosis be on the system, aka discrimination and abuses of power? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I feel like at Stanford we had something similar to imposter syndrome. It's called the duck syndrome, where basically the idea is that you would look really peaceful on top of the water, but in actuality you're pedaling really fast and frantically below the water. And that was a big culture thing at Stanford too, which, you know, you can imagine why did so many people identify with duck syndrome, because Stanford is very much complacent in a lot of those systems and in turning out people who are very high achieving, high strung individuals, honestly. So
had you heard this take on the phrase before?
I don't think I heard it on this particular term, but I feel like there have been a lot of discussions about other terms where it talks about how misdirected that language is to be on the individual rather than on the systems. I can't really think of off the top of my head right now though, what kind of words those were. Do you know of any other similar words that you've seen kind of like a turn in the phrase where people are like, rather than using this term that puts an onus on the individual, use this term instead?
Oh, I found the post.
Oh, you found it. Okay, please read it. Please read it.
One example. This is not the example I was thinking of, but I found another one. It's by a person, a faculty member, a professor called Maggie. Why I prefer using the term exploitation over burnout. Burnout makes it about worker feelings. Exploitation draws our attention to employer practices and policies, which require structural solutions.
That ties in actually really well with imposter syndrome. Yes. That was the word that you chose.
Oh, I'm so relieved I found it.
Okay, amazing. If there are other words or similar statements that you've seen, please send that to us, because we would love to
we'll highlight these.
Instagram. We would love to highlight them and just talk about that. Maybe we'll talk about that even more in a future episode. So, okay, back to the meat of the topic. What is a word, Sophia, that you surprisingly have a complicated relationship with? I want to hear the word, and I want to hear all the nitty-gritty backstory behind the word.
All right, my word is ambitious.
Okay.
Do you feel some type of way about the word ambitious?
I don't think in the same way that you do. I think the main issue that I would have, I think overall ambitious to me does have a positive connotation, and I do enjoy when people compliment me that I'm ambitious. But my worry with that word is that I'm ambitious, but I haven't achieved any of my ambitions. So you don't see that follow through behind the ambition.
Okay, that's actually a big thing that I want to talk about too.
Okay.
So what's the backstory behind the word ambitious? I think it comes up from, I think a lot of things happened in high school that led me to feel uncomfortable with this term. So I went to a private high school. My parents do not have very much money, but they really wanted me to go to religious school. And so my family was financially far less well off than most of my peers. Mm. And that's one big difference I had with my peers. Another difference is that while I come from an immigrant family, a lot of people have been in the US for their entire lives, and they just, their families have been in the US for generations. And so there wasn't this sense of, I need to prove myself, I need to make the most of my family sacrifice. Mm. And a lot of them were aiming to go to a private Christian college, which just from an admissions percentage perspective was less competitive than some of the schools I really wanted to go to. Mm. So that just kind of sets the context for differences between me and my peers. Mm-hmm. And so I've had people come up to me and say things like, oh, Sophia, when you try so hard in school, despite having good grades already, it makes the rest of us feel bad. Like, don't you know that? And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, okay. Like I tried to be pretty low key about the things I was really interested in school. Mm. And yet I was still making people feel bad. And so I felt like there, when people were upset about me for that, I thought it was a little bit unreasonable, but I also didn't know what to say in response.
Yeah.
Something else that I heard a lot in high school, I think when people looked at the things that I was good at, they would react in a way that made me wonder, oh, do they just see me as a very stereotypical Asian person? So a lot of my extracurriculars and hobbies and true genuine passions were things that a lot of Asian parents, other Asian parents, like forced their kids into. Like I genuinely love playing the piano, genuinely loved art, genuinely loved singing. And those are things that a lot of parents force their kids to do. And so I think when people saw that I was really into these things, I can't tell you what it was exactly, but the way that they would describe my interest or react to my interest made me wonder if they assumed I was only into those things that my parents forced me into them.
Yeah. And also that you'd only be interested in those things because you have, you know, you're conveniently placed to have a lot of resources and a lot of people to help you be really, really good, rather than the fact that you're actually driven by your pure, genuine interest and passion for it.
Mm-hmm. The third example of a statement I heard in high school was my mom saying, oh, Sophia, don't be too ambitious. No one will want to date you. Ambition hurts romantic relationships. She's like, if you want too much, if you want too much for yourself, if you want too much out of the other person, that leads to strain in relationships. And she's like, I just want to set you up for a healthy amount of expectations such that you don't let yourself down and you don't let other people down. So those are some statements that I heard in high school. And then in college and post-college, when people would reach out to me after a while of not chatting, they would often say things like, oh, I'm sure you've achieved a lot during the pandemic. Or, oh, you've been doing your podcast for 3 years. That's so ambitious. And I think people say that because they think I'm flattered by being called ambitious, which goes into a whole other thing, right? Like, why do people think I like being called ambitious? Like, what do they think the word means to me versus what does it actually mean to me?
Okay, yeah. And so
my big question is why I'm trying to figure out why people ended up putting this label of ambitious on me. And yeah.
Okay. Do you feel like, okay, because you're around a lot of very talented people, correct? So do you not hear the word ambitious or associate the word ambitious with a lot of other people around you? Because I guess for me, I associate a lot of my friends in my circles as like very ambitious. I want to learn more about like why, like what, how you feel about this word. So you mentioned like some of the context behind it, which we know we can, I have thoughts about all the different scenarios and situations you've mentioned. But what feeling do you have when you hear someone say, Sophia is very ambitious?
Yeah. One, it makes me feel kind of flattened as a person. And two, it makes me anxious. So
okay.
I it's kind of similar to what you mentioned before of like, oh, if people call me ambitious, then they assume I'm doing things because of my ambition. And if my goal is to be ambitious and to achieve a certain ambitious number, and I haven't achieved that, like, wow, I failed. When it's like, hello, that was never my goal in the first place. To give a more concrete example, there are a lot of other people in tech who are product managers, who are content creators, and they make a lot of tutorials on YouTube, or they grow a newsletter or something. Mm-hmm. That I think they have a very specific niche, and they're really committed to and interested in building their following and monetizing their content, right? And so I think compared to those people, when they look, I'm wary that others might look at me and Bamboo and Glass and look at these other tech content creators, and I'm wary that these people would look down on me for not achieving the same sort of like monetization goals or goals in a following.
Oh, I see. Because so much of tech and your role involves, again, those SMART goals, those metrics that we talked about last time.
Achieving those impressive numbers.
And
right.
That's not something that you're actively doing with this podcast. And that's a very intentional decision that you've made. But
right.
People could very well assume that you are operating this podcast the same way that you operate at work.
Exactly. And so I often am nervous about starting a new endeavor, because I know that people will assume I'm doing it for an ambitious reason. Mm-hmm. And they might hold me to that standard and watch and see if I'm meeting that standard, even though that's not what I'm working towards at all.
Because it's not like you've set out this goal with this podcast to meet, like, be popular enough to invite a really big name guest onto the podcast. It's not like, oh, I want to be on the Spotify charts, top 10 charts. That's not an active goal that you have. But I guess maybe it's just society too that just assumes like whatever passion project you do, people assume that, oh, like, wouldn't it be like, you probably would be very happy if you're work ended up being ranked really highly or been lauded in a particular way, and they extrapolate that to be the reason why you would start and continue to do something. Has there ever been a time where you felt flattered by the word ambitious, like ever, like one time that you felt flattered?
Not really.
Do you feel like it's because you had these situations from high school happen so early on that it informed the way that you see ambitious as a very complicated, not so great term?
And this ongoing fear that if people label me as ambitious, then they're going to, like, it's exactly what you said. If people label me as ambitious, they're going to hold me to their
high expectations.
Standard.
Yeah.
And it's not a standard that I want, or a standard sometimes even, I wonder if it's a standard I can even meet.
Yeah. Also, it's a standard, like, you already have high standards for yourself. And so you're pretty happy with just knowing how you feel, what your expectations are of yourself, and whether or not you meet your own expectations. You don't really care about other people's expectations. And so when people say that you're ambitious, it kind of feels non-consensual in a way where it's like, oh, okay, so now all of a sudden someone has placed this bar above me that I didn't ask for.
Yeah, that's a great point. I am proud of getting to a point where I can do things just for fun. And when other people place a label on me, and it makes, when I feel like an expectation is placed on me because of that word, it feels like my peaceful bubble is being popped and being intruded on.
Okay. Well, speaking of this bubble being intruded, let's clap back at some of these things that you brought up that inform the context of why you don't like the word ambitious. So the one about your mom, I actually resonate with, where she said that you shouldn't be too ambitious because no one will date you. I feel like relationships is a very interesting angle on this topic. Did your mom's input at all affect how you were feeling about potential relationships or romances in the future? Of like whether you'd be if you were to be perceived as ambitious, I guess.
Yeah. I did end up settling in romantic relationships because I was scared that my mom was right and I didn't deserve better.
Yeah. So, okay, you asked the great question. Why do people put this label on you? If I did not know this conversation, I very much well could have described you as an ambitious person. So if I were to give you my two cents, I think it's because you are someone who has a lot of integrity and a lot of work that you do. And of course, this is geared towards things that are not necessarily just like hobbies or things that you just do for fun. This is particularly in regards to things that you set your mind to do and have goals for. For me, ambitious equates the amount of effort that you are putting in to reach those goals. So it's not necessarily, ambitious does not mean you have lofty goals that you're not going to be able to reach. It's that you have these goals that you are working really hard towards because that's how much you want it. And so ambitious and passionate, I guess, kind of go hand in hand. Ambitious also, I think, has a lot of connotations when it comes to prestige as well. Like, I would choose to use the word ambitious rather than passionate in instances where I felt like, oh, like this is something that I've heard has been really revered by a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And Sophia is like working towards that. So those are my two cents.
It's interesting that to you, ambition has connotations of the journey towards the goal. It leans a little bit towards that. Whereas for me, I'm just realizing this. The connotations are greed. Like, I'm reaching for more than I deserve in terms of like, oh, Sophia, you already have grades that are good enough. Why do you care to study harder? Or, oh, Sophia, like, there are these nice guys around you. Why are you not happy dating them? And so it has this connotation of greed, which is like, I think greed is bad.
Oh my God. That's a big difference between the ways that we interpret that word.
And I think this connotation comes out when I think about how this label impacts me today. Like, one of them is I have some anxiety about people I know in real life discovering our podcast, even though I've been doing this for like 3.5 years. I just still feel weird about it. Two, I'm afraid to try new things and share that I'm trying new things because I worry people think I'm doing it just to hustle and I'm like reinforcing hustle culture, which I would hate to do. Like me sharing my painting on my Instagram and sharing my mini vlog on Instagram Reels, like that took like months of contemplation. Another way it impacts me is I'm afraid that when people call me ambitious and if it comes with like a connotation of greed, I worry that they might not support me in my goals. Like I worry people might think like, oh, Sophia's reaching for more than she deserves. I don't know if it's like worth supporting her.
Wow.
See, I think if I replace the word ambitious in all these contexts and put greedy, I think anyone would really, really relate to everything I've shared.
Yeah. See, this is why this conversation is very important because we are interpreting the same word that we read on paper completely differently. But for what I said in terms of my interpretation of ambitious and how I would apply that to you, do you personally agree with what I said as like my evaluation of my perception of you? You agree? Okay. Okay, I feel good about that then. I'm glad that those things are things that you are able to perceive as positive. So now it's just about finding a good alternative word. So What word do you wish people would use instead of ambitious when, if they were to describe some of those positive I guess since you said you don't really feel much positivity around that word, taking what I said about you as the positive aspects of ambitious, what word would you prefer people use then in those situations?
Oh, I would say curious, passionate, focused, and persistent.
Oh, you pulled those right out.
Yeah.
What about, so I'm curious about persistent. What connotations that has for you, like how you interpret that word then?
Persistent is more of willing to tolerate a lot of challenges on the journey of achieving a goal, which I think like, is like positive.
Like perseverance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So
Maybe persevering is a better word than persistent. I think persistent is not the correct word.
So perseverance?
I think persevering. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So persevering, curious, passionate, and focused are words that make Sophia feel good, everyone. So if you are a dear friend of Sophia listening and you didn't know this about her, I hope this gave you some insight. I feel like it gave me a lot of insight. And now you know, now she gave you action items of what words to use instead. I mean, because honestly, isn't it kind of, I feel like it's kind of awkward to tell someone, hey, I actually don't really like this word that you're using. Can you actually like use this word instead for me? Mm. And so maybe it's kind of nicer that you've just put it out on a podcast and you don't have to address someone directly about it.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But thanks for taking me on the journey of understanding ambitious.
Yeah. Well, what's a word that you, what's a word people use to describe you that you have some complicated feelings about?
So I will, as a disclaimer, I don't think a lot of people use this word with me anymore. And I think it's because I've very actively hidden it from people. But it is a word that when it is brought up, I feel very about. So the word is cute.
Mm. Sounds so benign, you know, but it's
okay,
not.
Okay, wait,
tell
wait,
me
wait,
more.
Wait, no, but I want to know, one, would you ever call me cute? And two, what connotations does cute have to you?
I would not call you cute. Like, I think, like, of course, you're very beautiful. But I mean, I wouldn't call you cute as in, I wouldn't say, of all my observations of your personality, the one word that sums it up is cute. No, that's okay. Not at all.
Do you feel some type of way about the word cute?
I cannot imagine anyone ever calling me cute.
I can associate cute with you when you fangirl.
Oh, I see, I see. Well, see, not many people get to see that.
See, I feel like, yeah, okay. The fact that you just said that cute would be a word that is only used by people really, really close to you who like got a particular insight into you. I definitely feel the same way. I think, okay, so cute, where do I even start? I'm like, cute, right off the bat, I think when people say that I'm cute, it feels very infantilizing. It makes me think of kawaii. It makes me think of like aegyo. And that's something that is actually very prominent in my family. So people always say that when they hear my mom talk, they think it's like a five-year-old. Like my mom has such a baby voice and she also like has no trouble like being all cutesy in the house. And my dad is also the same way. So just naturally, the way that I was raised, I was just around a lot of quote unquote cuteness. And I think I was trained from a young age that that's something that other people cannot know about me, that I am that cute.
Interesting. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I think there's some type of connotation with cute if you are Asian compared to if you're not Asian. Like, I don't know, like my perception of like a white blonde girl being called cute is just based on like beauty, I feel, versus for an Asian girl being called cute, it's like, oh, they're very babyish and childish is kind of the feeling that I get. Two stories that I have around the word cute. My freshman year roommate in college, who I adore so much, she very lovingly like used to say that like I'm so cute, which I was happy with because she is someone that I'm very close with, and she kind of I feel like she has that privilege to be able to use that word with me. But she used to invite over a lot of her friends into our room. And so they, like, I would end up meeting a lot of her friends, but I wouldn't be close to them. And in side conversations with her, she'd let me know that her friends, after I leave, they'd say something like, "Oh, Tan is so cute." And I told her that I actually really didn't like being called cute. Because, like, it was, that was the only word that people apparently would use to describe me. Mm-hmm. And so I told her that. And so, as a fun story, she was like, "Okay, since you don't like the word cute, I'm gonna rebuttal everyone who ever calls you cute and say that Tan is sexy and beautiful." And so there was this one time in the dining hall where I left that her and her friend turned to her and was like, "Your roommate's so cute." And my roommate was like, "No, she's sexy and beautiful." And the friend was like, "What?" And then she explained the backstory. Mm-hmm. And the friend was like, "No, that's not going to work." And so it's almost felt like this label, like, no matter
how... Wait, hold on. That's not going to work? What does that mean?
Oh, like, my roommate won't be able to convert everyone from calling me cute.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So it's felt like this label, no matter how much I try to hide it, it comes out in some way without my knowing. So that's one story. The second one is with my current partner, James. He is a person of very few words, to say the least. And I think that's something that in many ways I admire about him, because he makes things very simple and not complicated when my thoughts are running around and contradicting each other all the time. Whenever I ask him, what is your favorite quality of me? Or like, what do you like about me? Like, sometimes I'll just ask those questions. And he always says, "You're just cute. You're just so cute." And that's all he'll ever say. And no matter how much I budge or try to get him to like give me another reason, he just says like, "Cute is just the word to like describe you." And granted, he is the person who I probably act most similarly with the way that I act with my family. So I guess there are some aspects of that comfortability where the quote-unquote cuteness comes out. But in those instances, I would much prefer being called ambitious or smart or successful, or I guess very like success-driven adjectives than the word cute. So that's the context for how cute comes up for me.
Okay. So I think it's interesting that this word has a lot of like relationships with your family and you speak Korean with your family. What is the if you were called cute in Korean, what is typically the connotation of a girl your age being called cute in Korean?
Oh, I think it's the same thing.
It's the same. Okay.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that the word that I dislike is a word that causes people to place like heavy expectations on me or judge me for my passions, whereas your word almost seems to be a word that reflects, a word that makes you feel reduced. Like, yes, instead of being like beautiful, thoughtful, elegant, XYZ, you're cute.
Yeah, like cute for some reason does not, I feel like ambitious can go with thoughtful. Ambitious can go with a lot of other, those, whatever words you just said. Cute does not immediately come to mind as a word that would go hand in hand with thoughtful or anything like that. And so I do feel like cute in my portrayal of myself on the internet. I try very hard to be someone who you can take very seriously, who, you know, successes are not minimized in any way. And I feel like cuteness, if someone were to call me cute, I just worry that people wouldn't take me seriously because of that. So I don't really share. And so even things like fangirling over a drama or talking about how cute a boy is, I refrain from a lot of that behavior because I feel like because my perception of myself would be that I am not being very thoughtful or I'm not going to be someone who people take seriously.
Yeah, it still baffles me a bit that so many people, strangers and close people, call you cute, because it has never ever crossed my mind to call you something like that. Like, when I think of the physique of a stereotypical cute Asian girl, like, they are 5 feet tall and do the big puppy eye makeup. And that's not you at all. And so,
yeah.
like,
yeah,
I don't really see the connection with... Do you... Okay. When your first year roommate's friends called you cute, was it more like a... You know, when you meet someone and you, like... enjoyed talking to them, you would say like, oh, she's sweet, she's nice, she's cute. Do you think it was a very like casual word like that?
So the thing I think that's tricky with cute is that you don't know if that's referring to like appearance, like exterior, mm-hmm. or a personality quality about them. So I think that's why I feel complicated about this, because if I'm being called cute because of my physical appearance, that supposedly has a positive connotation. But if it's with my personality, then that's the one that feels most infantilizing and reducing me. Yeah.
Can I offer a different interpretation or connotation?
I would love to hear. Yeah. Okay. I mean, are you surprised to hear me say that cute is a word that I feel very complicated about?
I just haven't heard stories of other people being upset by the word cute. But after I hear your backstory and kind of like the particular circumstances of like your parents and how being cute is like a very intimate personal thing, I can now see why this is kind of weird for you. Yeah. I think cute could also mean like
wholesome.
I think wholesome is a very basic word, actually. Not cheerful. Cheerful is not the right word, but like bright, like a bright personality, like someone who you just feel like, wow, when I'm with them, I feel like they're sunshine and they're energetic. That's what I think of when I think cute.
So that's been a word that I do want to embrace more to some extent, because I think that there are positive connotations to the word cute. And objectively, there are a lot of things in my objects that I own in my house that are cute.
Yes, you have a lot of plushies.
Yeah, you would only describe these plushies as cute. And
yeah.
And it's like, wouldn't I want to be one of these plushies? I would love to be one of these plushies that I can look at and just be like, wow, they're so cute and they can do no wrong in my eyes. But I feel like that gets tricky when it comes to like career. I don't know, like I just can't really think of a time where in the workplace you would be happy being called cute. Actually, it would be more creepy and, again, feeling reduced into a child. Yeah. So I would say that cute is a word that is really only reserved for family, for people I consider family. So basically, my parents and my boyfriend. It's not a word that I would ever want to be heard in other contexts, I think, outside of like a household. So that's currently, I guess, the boundaries that I would set if I were to create boundaries. But I would also like to start up a journey where I embrace more of, I guess, my cuteness, whatever that means.
What do you think Roxana's friends or James intended to say? Like, if you know, you have a very full and rich vocabulary. If you had to guess what they were trying to get at when calling you cute, what do you think they were trying to get at?
I mean, I know you said wholesome is basic, but probably wholesome. And because I think wholesome doesn't really have, to me, it doesn't really give that infantilizing connotation that cute does. Genuine. Genuine, I would say, is like the mature version of pure, because I think cute is like in the category with words of pure, naive, innocent, which, you know, objectively, I would agree that I am some of these things, but they kind of seem, I just feel like I age like 20 years backwards rather than stay at my age. And I think genuine is the mature version of those words.
I like genuine. That's good. Genuine is too.
Genuine and what you said, bright. Wholesome, genuine, bright are the three words that I would replace, I guess, with cute.
Very interesting. The next time someone calls you cute, Let's say it's one of your, since you talked about career, let's say it's one of your classmates for school, and you share a script and you're really proud of it and everyone's cheering for you. People are like, oh my gosh, like Tan is so cute when she's happy sharing a script. Let's say someone calls you cute in that context. What? Mm. And you had to think of an ideal response that you would rehearse and give and feel proud of giving. What would you want to like say in that kind of setting?
Sorry, my brain went in a completely different direction when you shared that.
Okay, go ahead.
The observation I just had is with this me presenting a script, I have no problem with someone saying that the script is cute. It's just mm-hmm. like on me as a person, because I feel like there are a lot of stories that I write that are like, oh, I guess heartwarming would be another word. Like mm-hmm. there are very heartwarming family stories. And objectively, I try to do a lot of my stories similar to a lot of Disney Pixar ones, because that's where I like, get a lot of my inspiration. And I would say that most people would describe those as cute, probably, mm-hmm. if you were asked that question. So I don't really have a problem with cute being applied to things that I create. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of weird if someone were to call me cute from sharing a script.
Yeah, to be honest, I have never heard, in a social setting, I've never heard someone call someone else cute. That just seems like something, that just seems like a vocabulary of a high schooler. Like,
yeah, it's a very, I think it's a very superficial word too. It can come off very superficial, because the times that we've used cute in our conversations is when we're talking about Singles Inferno, about who we think is cute on this island. And that's completely going off of not knowing anything about them and just looking at their physical attraction.
Yes. Yeah, I can see how it's frustrating for you to have this awesome first interaction with someone. And despite having, you know, despite showing your personality and being your real self, someone's summary is something that is, when someone summarizes that interaction, they use a word that they could have used very like casually when describing like a cute guy on an island for a dating show. Yeah. I can see why you feel reduced by the word.
Yeah. Yeah. And that goes back to not always knowing how people chose to use that word, whether it's personality wise or physical appearance wise. Mm-hmm. But if I were to talk to someone who did call me cute, I think I'd want to know, I think I would probably ask them, why did you call me cute? Like, did you mean genuine or wholesome or one of the other ones? If it was personality wise, I think I'd be curious what about my personality gave off a cute vibe to them in the context where I'm just sharing a piece of work. So I don't really have an answer of like, this is the action that someone should take if I were to confront them about the word cute.
Yeah.
But other replacement words would be genuine, wholesome, and heartwarming. Oh. And I think there was another one.
Bright.
Bright. Bright. Yeah. Mm. I would say those are words that I would like to hear more. Like, I don't feel like bright is a word that's kind of slept on and would actually encompass, like, bright, it could also be used for someone who's smart. You call that person bright. But you can also call someone who has like a very sunshine personality bright. Mm. So bright is a good one.
I think Yewon from Singles Inferno is bright.
Yeah. Anyone who's watched Singles Inferno, DM us. We'll love to talk
DM
to you.
Us.
We'll love to talk thoughts. To you about that. Yeah. Yeah, because cute you'd probably use on Chiyeon, like in the with like the personality aspect and stuff. And I think just me as an outside person looking in at what this show has presented us, I don't really see that much depth to her personality, TBH. So I feel like that way that I perceived her is pretty accurate of like my own hesitations of people perceiving me to be cute.
Interesting. Well, thank you for bringing up this topic. What was it like hearing a word like what was it like, I guess, hearing such different interpretations of the words ambitious versus cute?
Yeah, I think it really just emphasizes that it does not hurt to have an in-depth conversation about a word like this with a trusted person who you would like to confide in and just talk about why we interpret words the way that we do, and why does it elicit this type of response or reaction from us? Because I feel like it was very telling to hear you tell me that you would never use the word cute, and like, what are the reasons why you would never use the word cute? Mm-hmm. And then for you to also share all of these backstory experiences that led you to not feel any sort of positive feelings towards the word ambitious. And I think that's something I would have never known just by looking at the word ambitious and cute. So, yeah.
Well, thank you for bringing up this idea. This is so fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So to our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you kind of enjoyed this deep dive into two words that have had some influence over us and made us think a lot. And I hope that it makes you think about some words that maybe you've noticed are associated with you, or words that you place upon others around you, and consider having a conversation with them. If you want to share anything with your friends, definitely share this episode. Let them know that we're on every podcasting platform. And you can always DM us anytime on Instagram. DM us about Singles Inferno. DM us about how you feel about these particular words or other words that you are associated with. And just let us know what else you would love to hear from us, because we have been enjoying a lot of these solo conversations that we've been having together. And if there's anything else you wanted us to do a deep dive on, we'd love to hear from you. And so with that, we hope you have a great rest of your day, rest of your week, and we'll see you on Sunday. Bye.
Bye.